Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
The headline, unfortunately, has been the events and have been the events taking place in Israel over the weekend. See, what seems to have started rumbling during the course of last week intensified over Friday. Thankfully, there does seem to be a ceasefire in play at the moment. What was absolutely astounding, but always is the way that Israel and this conflict is reported in mainstream media. We wanted to chat to somebody who talks about this and who deals with this almost every day of his life. Avi May is a former IDF spokesperson. He's a writer, an analyst. He's based in Jerusalem, talking about narrative versus facts with us this morning. Avi, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. I'm doing much better today than I was yesterday. How are you?
Well, for multiple reasons, I imagine. Not only was it a fast day in Israel, well, all around the world for Jews, but Israel, very, very hot. It's the middle of summer. At least we have the privilege here of being in winter with a shorter day. But that aside, obviously, was dwarfed by the conflict that was going on and the fact that Israel was under attack. Give us a brief overview for anybody who isn't up to date. What was the story here?
Sure. So on Monday of last week, Israeli forces arrested the West Bank commander of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is, of course, a terrorist organization recognized as such by the U.S., the EU, and many others. And that incident took off a several-day period of preparations on the part of the Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip for a series of attacks within Israel. This was known. The Israeli forces on the border were able to monitor those preparations. They knew that there was a plan for rocket attacks and perhaps also attacks by anti-tank missiles against targets on the Israeli side of the border. Israeli residents of towns close to Gaza were restricted. They were, in many cases, actually told to stay in their homes for several days. Until on Friday, Israeli forces took out the commander of the Islamic Jihad in the northern Gaza Strip, which touched off a series of escalations over the course of several days. So over the course of the past few days, we saw nearly 1,000 rockets fired by the Islamic Jihad towards Israel. About somewhere between a fifth and a third of them actually fell within the Gaza Strip. We can talk about that in a moment. But also over the past few days, we've seen Israel carry out a series of pinpoint strikes that took out several other senior commanders as well as terror facilities across the Gaza Strip. As you noted earlier, we have now entered a period of calm. There's been a ceasefire in place for the past few hours, and there have not been attacks since then. And we can only hope that that ceasefire indeed holds.
So that is the situation. That's where we're at the moment. What, of course, was fascinating was Saturday evening, there was this announcement, tragic announcement, that a number of kids in Gaza had been killed by a rocket. The condemnation was very, very quick until Israel could show quite unequivocally that in fact that rocket came from the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It had misfired or it had turned around and killed the kids. Then of course it goes completely silent. There's no outrage. Nobody seems to care about these kids that have been killed in Gaza by the Islamic Jihad. Isn't that incredibly, even though we're not surprised, isn't it just horrific?
Look, it's really striking every time. As they say, no Jews, no news. And if Israel can't be blamed, then as you say, the news often goes ignored. In this case, it was actually quite easy to demonstrate that the children's tragic death was the result of a Palestinian Islamic Jihad rocket that misfired and exploded in the Gaza Strip. There was ample video evidence. There were several videos that were circulating even from within the strip, and they were then supplemented by Israeli footage that was sent out, I believe, during the day yesterday, showing unequivocally that that was indeed the case. There were actually several other cases of rockets exploding within the Gaza Strip that had been meant for Israeli cities and towns. We don't have a clear sense of how many people have been killed in total, but by at least one estimate that I've seen, it is possible that more Palestinians were killed by Palestinian rockets in this round of fighting than by Israeli military action, which is really quite striking. But as you say, of course, that will go largely ignored, because when Israel can't be held responsible, there are many media outlets that unfortunately simply don't see it as news.
So how do we deal with that? You know, we had the situation here in South Africa as well, where the Department of International Affairs came out very, very quickly. That wasted absolutely not a nanosecond in condemning Israel, made no reference to the fact that these kids had been killed by Islamic Jihad, blamed Israel, demanded all sorts of things, as they always do about Israel, of course, not occupying, which is always interesting considering Israel hasn't been in Gaza since 2005. But that aside, how do we deal with this? How do we make people talk about things that they're actually just not prepared to talk about?
Well, look, actually, the point that you just made is an important one. Israel has, in fact, not been in Gaza Strip since 2005. That's quite a long time, almost 20 years. Israel has not had a presence within the Strip. It had gone through the very painful process of uprooting thousands of Israeli families and a significant military presence in the Strip in order to give the Palestinians living there the opportunity for freedom and prosperity. Of course, what we've seen is that the Gaza Strip has become a terror base, that the residents of that territory have been held hostage by Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and other terrorist groups that operate in that place, and have used it as a launching pad for a series of tens of thousands of rocket attacks and other forms of terrorism targeting Israeli civilians. These are important facts, and it's important that we remind our interlocutors of them anytime we talk about what's happening on the ground. Yes, of course, we have to make sure that they are reporting the facts accurately, that, for example, an incident like the tragic one on Saturday night in which Palestinian children were killed by Palestinian rockets are made known, but the context does matter. And it's important that any time we talk about it, we raise that context and we talk about the history and how we got to where we are and how we perhaps can emerge from this into a more peaceful and hopeful future.
Do you see any improvement? And in fact, I'm asking a loaded question in a way, because to some extent, I do think that this weekend, in terms of Israel media coverage, was a much more positive one than we have seen in a while.
I agree entirely. I think that, first of all, it was a relatively brief campaign. I suspect that if it had gone on for longer and there were perhaps operational mishaps or other incidents, that the media coverage would have turned quite sour. But for what it was, I think the media coverage was reasonable. We did see many major media outlets reference the contested fact that was put out by the Palestinian Hamas-controlled health ministry that indeed these children were killed by an airstrike. We, of course, know that that's not the case, so at least numerous outlets mentioned the fact that Israel contests this and has video evidence to prove that it is, in fact, not the case. And in general, I think the fact that the number of casualties was relatively low. Of course, any time an innocent civilian is killed, it is unspeakably tragic. But the fact that the numbers were relatively low this time enabled us to emerge relatively unscathed from a media perspective. We can only hope that that will remain the case, that we, of course, as we always do, will take whatever measures we can to limit civilian casualties in the future, and thus that the media accounts will be as reflective of reality as possible.
Avig, you were a IDF spokesperson, your former IDF spokesperson. Have you seen a shift in the way the IDF is communicating? And the reason that I ask this is we're definitely seeing more videos, I think, and maybe it's just anecdotal, I can't say that for absolute certain, more videos, more transparency in terms of how the IDF is operating since you were there. For example.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, when I was at the IDF spokesperson's unit, we were only just getting into the realm of social media. We had just started putting live aerial footage on YouTube. This was quite experimental at the time. And we've gotten to the point where today the social media operation in the IDF is quite extensive and extremely active, to the point where several other rounds of fighting have actually been announced on social media to the world before they reach the traditional media or other ways of communication. I think that we have seen, certainly over the past year and indeed in this past campaign, a very nimble, strategic, and innovative IDF that is able to communicate quite effectively to various audiences around the world, including, as you say, the use of video and other footage through memes, social media posts, and so on and so forth. I have to say I'm quite proud of what they have accomplished, and I can only hope that they will continue to show that sophistication in other future rounds of fighting.
There's no doubt, because it really does, when you see that these types of videos unequivocally showing, for example, an aborted attack on a terrorist because there happens to be somebody walking past, or there are children mm-hmm. in the area, and you hear these conversations, and when you hear the conversation yep. about somebody calling, they're from the IDF, calling a resident of Gaza saying, are you sure, you know, we just want to destroy the weapon area, are you sure that there's nobody in the area? Those are very, very powerful for anybody that wishes to engage in them. Obviously, if you don't, then you know you can choose whatever you want.
No, that's absolutely true. And I think that you know we can walk around and say the IDF is the most moral army in the world. I don't know what we have to compare that to, but in fact, when you have that video footage, it shows how Israeli military ethics are put into action and how Israel applies its sense of morality when it engages in combat that's forced upon it by terrorist organizations goes to extraordinary measures to protect civilian life, to ensure that military action does not come at the expense of innocent civilians, be they children. As you said, there is this video circulating in which an airstrike is called off 3 times because there are children in the immediate vicinity of the target, and only on the 4th attempt, when it is made clear that there are no children in the area, is the airstrike carried out. And there are several others that I think you mentioned over the course of the past few days that have demonstrated the really tremendous lengths that Israel will go to protect civilian life. And I think that really speaks to far more than words ever could about the true morality of the Israeli military operation and how we really will go to those lanes to do whatever we can to limit civilian casualties.
Absolutely. Avi, before I let you go, I can hear your cat in the background. Do you know that, and probably that's what your cat is trying to tell us, to remind us that today is International Cat Day.
I did not know that, but I'll be sure to celebrate it with him later on.
I just thought, you know what, because he's thinking, why are you talking to Avi when it's my day here? This is International Cat Day. I'm the one who should be on air. Avi Meir, thank you. As always, keep up the amazing work that you do. It is 7:30. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.